Hi folks, welcome to the Money 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 podcast. I'm Surabhi Upadhyay and we come to you every week with some very interesting conversations to help you get your personal finances in order and get smart with your money. The fixed income market has gone through a storm of sorts over the past few months that finally seems to be settling down. Now, while liquidity seems to have returned and the NBFC crisis more or less contained, there have been questions also raised about the kind of securities that your debt fund money is actually parked in. Add to that the recent RBI policy and the talk about the future direction of interest rates. So we thought it's a good time to get a chat going about the do's and don'ts that you must keep in mind while investing in fixed income. And of course, also get you some ideas, some kind of advice on the kind of funds that you can perhaps have in your debt portfolio, funds that are worth investing in tune with your own objectives and your risk appetite. Joining me to do all of this on the show today are Lakshmi Iyer, CIO Fixed Income at Kotak Mutual Fund, Ashish Shankar, who heads the private wealth management at Motilal Oswal, and Vidya Bala of FundsIndia.com. Thanks to all of you for joining in. It's an important issue, and I thought an interesting one as well, because Lakshmi, what has happened is that on Money, 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 over the last year and a half, a lot of the retail appetite started sort of increasing for fixed income funds, people looking at better alternatives to fixed deposits. Now, this class of investors is wondering what all has happened. ILNFS, liquidity crisis, NBFC. So where does this leave my fixed income debt mutual fund? Let's start with the opening thoughts from you.
No, I'll tell you, the beauty of this entire thing is, though the last couple of months have been a huge roller coaster, despite that, if you just look at the tracker and across the fixed income categories, right from liquid to duration categories, not a single category has actually given you a negative return on a one-year basis. While I'm talking about short term, because in debt, the long term is actually 3 years to account for the long term capital gains. 3 years, these numbers look even better. So, yes, there has been a very tumultuous ride. But the point is, I have witnessed theme parks across the world, and I have never seen a roller coaster. It might start you inverted, but it brings you just straight. So I think that's very critical when investors are making investments, even in the bond markets, that it's very natural to see some volatility, and some could be high-end volatilities like the ones that we just saw about 6 to 8 weeks back. Mm. But I think staying the course is very, very important.
Okay. Ashish, your thoughts. So would you agree this roller coaster ride that we've seen?
Yeah, so last 3 months has been very stressful for a lot of clients. Mm. I think these crisis periods, and we've seen many of them over the last 10, 15 years, are a stark reminder that if you don't stick to the basics of investing, you could run into accidents. Mm. So, there are 2-3 ways you can make money from fixed income. One is you put it in a fund and you stay invested for the period for which the fund is invested for, and you make your interest. Second is, you take a call on interest rate. Mm. And the third is you try and invest in a fund which tries to take a little bit of credit risk. There is go down the credit curve and make a little bit of extra money. Mm. Now, whenever you short circuit this process, let's say you invest in a fund which is meant for 3 years, but you try to take a call for a year or for 6 months, we've seen that market always reminds you during this crisis that it's not the right thing to do.
Okay, Lakshmi, I'm going to ask you to simplify this down for us, because we also end up jargonizing a lot. I mean, and investors, retail audiences would have heard these terms, NBFC, DHFL, who's investing in what. So break it down to the basics for us. As a retail investor who's investing in one of your funds and one of your peer group funds as well, obviously apart from, government securities, G-Secs and some of that paper, there's a lot of other corporate paper that you're also investing in. Right. So when it comes to risk grades, what is it that the investor should know? What are the questions that an investor should ask before parking money in a fixed income fund?
So firstly, let me clarify, NBFC is not a bad word. I know it's got a tag of
exactly,
a bad word,
yeah.
But it's not a bad word. There are other bad words which people use. NBFC is certainly not number one. You can't say that, this sector is risky or this sector is less risky. I think it is the underlying business that determines the color or the texture of the risk that one takes on the business. Mm. In that, again, you have market leaders. Mm. So for example, like NBFC is a bad word. I often get told, do you have real estate in your portfolio? Mm. People have one house, two houses, multiple houses.
Yeah. Whether you've subscribed to bonds issued by a builder or
absolutely.
Some kind of paper.
Yeah. But real estate, again, is, I would say, a pariah or a Harijan in this kind of market scenario. Again, my point is that there is no such thing. And that's where, you know, money managers have an astute role to play, where they kind of cherry pick, like equities do bottom-up stock picking. It's our onus as bond money managers to do that bottom-up stock picking, keeping in mind the overall economy and therefore have an overlay of the top down.
I guess it's all about knowing your own risk appetite and then asking the question, how risky is that asset that you're investing, you know, the underlying security that your money is going in. We'll come back to this and selection of the kind of funds, selection of, you know, the portfolio with its own set of sort of risks. We'll get back to that. But let me also bring in Vidya into the conversation. Vidya, your opening thoughts on, you know, whether the storm has entirely settled and what kind of queries perhaps you would have been receiving from investors as well on debt funds.
Yeah, so the storm isn't entirely settled. I think people are a bit rattled by the risk emanating from both sides, that is from credit as well as duration. So what's the reason behind, you know, investors, you know, getting psyched by these? Basically, because most investors in our experience tend to view debt funds like FDs. While they get the idea that they cannot expect fixed returns, they don't get the idea that they can be volatile, that returns can go down too, and you need to know which class of debt funds to pick to get the returns that you want and the risk that you want. So that's where the fundamental problem comes from. For example, last year, many investors, you know, would buy the returns in dynamic bond funds, invested and really hurt themselves. And remember, their time frame here was not really long. So that was the problem. They thought they could have a 1 year exposure or a 6 month exposure to a dynamic bond fund and got hurt. Similarly, credit risk funds. You don't enter credit risk funds with the idea of, you know, taking a 3 month, 6 month exposure, thinking because it's an accrual fund. Because if, even if one of the paper fails there, you're going to take time to get back the money. So these are, you know, issues, micro issues that investors find it hard to understand. And that's where time frame based investing comes into play.
Sure, absolutely. You know, take your point. And that's really important to know your own time frame and then to invest accordingly. So, you know, as we start this exercise, let's just rewind back and go over the basic concept. If you're getting into a fixed income fund, you need to be aware of two things, accrual and duration, and decide or ask your investment advisor to help you decide between which of these two strategies that you need to be in. As, you know, Vidya mentioned, Ashish, that there are people who didn't understand this difference and probably ended up going into a, you know, a dynamic bond fund for 6 months, 1 year, and then you end up sort of with losses. So let's look at the interest rate sensitive category, the dynamic bond category or the duration category first up.
Absolutely.
So now on duration, what is it that you're telling investors?
See, first up, I strongly believe that, you know, dynamic funds cannot be the core allocation in a fixed income portfolio because by nature it is a volatile product and it will move depending on the interest rate view as well as the actual interest rates. So this is something that people need to understand. But for somebody who's been investing in fixed income funds for a while, namely a seasoned investor, he could take some exposure in a dynamic bond fund if he believes that, you know, RBI is going to cut rates. Because what typically happens is in a bond, if the interest rates go down, the bond prices go up and vice versa.
Sure.
So a dynamic fund would benefit in an environment where interest rates are generally going down. But I would still not recommend dynamic bond funds at this point in time because the overall interest rate scenario is still very muddled.
Okay.
They should probably stick to the plain vanilla accrual funds, you know,
funds
with 3 year maturities.
No, don't get worried. Yeah. If you're hearing these terms for the first time, we'll come to accrual as a separate category in a moment after the break. But before we take that break, Lakshmi, it's ironical because we were discussing risk profile and you put government securities right up there. I mean, AAA, sovereign, least risky. But from an investor's point of view, it can be very risky because interest rates vary. There is no risk of default there because it's a sovereign. Yeah. There's a time risk. There's an interest rate risk anyway.
Right.
So how does an investor understand this?
No, so essentially what the bond investor needs to understand is there are three types of risk when you make an investment into a fixed income category. One is the interest rate risk. Second is the credit risk. And last but not the least, the liquidity risk. When you invest in debt mutual funds, you are in a way outsourcing the liquidity risk because you usually have daily NAVs and open-ended funds. But the interest rate risk and the credit risk is something that you have to bear with you. You don't have a choice. I think that is where the gilt funds will score high. Volatility, I completely agree with what Ashish said that the volatility will be too unnerving because that is the primary market. You know, this market trades 80, 90,000 crores in a single day. So you can imagine the kind of volatility it can have associated with it on the upside as well as the downside. So, you know, in a very plain, simple terms, and we can start with a food example since I love food apart from finance. You can have a curd rice, which is, and this is a tam-tam in me talking, and that is your very simple, ordinary debt funds at the shorter end. Then you have curd rice garnished with some pomegranate, those are your ultra short kind of funds, and then you go into high-end garnishing, some cilantro, some mustard and all those things, those are your little bit. So I'm still calling it curd rice because it'll still not upset your tummy.
Okay.
So I think bond funds or the fixed income funds should be treated like these curd rices, but then you can, as I said, you know, garnish it or spike it with whatever you like,
okay,
just to make it a little bit more palatable, but spike it only as much as you can take intoxication.
As much as you can take it. You know, well, Vidya, let me start with you and get your opening thoughts on accrual as a strategy and whether you think that makes perfect sense for you. And how do you go about explaining it to the people who come in over there?
Right. So over the years, what we have found is that investors understand accrual far better than duration strategy because, like I said, the volatility in duration is quite unnerving for them. So explaining accrual is a little more easier because you are able to take the interest of the underlying instruments, basically the yield of the portfolio, and explain to them that is the returns that they would get where they to hold the funds for the maturity of that, you know, the average maturity of that fund. That plus the expense ratio is roughly, you know, what you should get, plus or minus the capital appreciation or capital depreciation that might happen in the portfolio because of interest rate movements. So once investors get a grip of the yield to maturity is a technical term, but we try to explain that's the coupon that the underlying instruments get. So once they get a grip of that, they try and compare it with what is available outside, you know, with their FDs or with their post office, and then see if this makes sense to them. Of course, within that, there is a range. There will be, you know, yield to maturity with 8% and those with 10%. And we try and explain to investors that those come with a bit of risk. You know, the credit risk funds give those higher yield to maturity, and your short-term AAA funds, etc., give you lower yield to maturity. So that seems to be a more simpler way for investors to understand that the interest accrues over the period of the maturity of the underlying instruments. And you need to hold the said fund for at least this period of time, that is the average maturity period, in order to get those returns. We have been reasonably successful in explaining to investors this concept.
Okay, so, you know, I'm going to take this back to you, Lakshmi, because now this is where it gets interesting, because now you're not looking at funds which are only investing in government bonds. They're investing in all kinds of paper. It could be corporate NBFC, as you mentioned. And here the concept of risk becomes important, because while a lot of it is hard sold as, oh, your FD is giving you only 7%, look at this fund, it'll probably give you 9-10%. How does an investor go through the risk profile? It's very difficult to look at the whole list of securities.
Absolutely.
And then read through. And these days, AAA may no longer be AAA, you know, next day when you wake up. What's the advice here?
So two distinct you know, features which one need to bear in mind is that why do gilts have volatility? Because they are inherently longer duration. Government of India tries to borrow long, whereas most corporate India tries to borrow short to medium term. So that therein where the underlying of maybe a credit risk fund or a corporate bond fund, where the usual maturity is give or take a few years here or there, you're investing either in 1 year bond, 2 year bond, 3 year bonds, upper end of 5 year bond. So that's your spectrum. Now, the risk associated, as Vidya rightly mentioned, there is an element of credit risk. There is no free lunch, right? But the beauty is that mutual funds offer diversification. So you have 30 stocks, 40 stocks, 50 stocks, and if luck would have it, if India matures even more, we'll have 100 stocks in a portfolio of fixed income. So now therein lies a risk diversification. So yes, where there is no free lunch, what you need to know as an investor is that these risks are inherent to any fixed income investing.
Okay.
Unless there's a credit loss, no investor will lose his or her capital in fixed income investing. So I think that is fundamental. And last but not the least, all this is not Googleable. You know, for everything people think it's Google. I think you need an advisor. You need an astute financial advisor by your side who is just eating, drinking, breathing all of this.
No, absolutely. Because in my own sort of experiences, I've seen IFAs come out and only talk about the good side. The fact that this is a fund that's going to give you maybe 2%, 3% more than your fixed deposit. But there are questions on the other side, the risk side that one needs to ask. These are credit risk funds. That's why the regulator has now rightly changed the nomenclature to credit risk. Earlier they were called credit opportunity funds, but with opportunity there's also risk. Now here's the thing, another sort of part of the recent storm has been the kind of securities that are going in these funds, including, I mean, there was a controversy about whether there are certain well-known promoters in the market or well-known individuals, and whether bonds issued by them are bonds that mutual funds subscribe to, whether they're collateralized or not. So then as the end retail investor, is my money being put to risk?
Absolutely. So my sense is that financial world is no different than Bollywood, you know. So Padmavati was a controversy, but the moment you made it Padmavat, it was acceptable. Priyanka Chopra's wedding veil had a controversy. It had, you know, such a... So I'm saying controversies are part of life. It's going to be part of the financial markets also. My only underlying submission is that no mutual fund, okay, make no mistake, no mutual fund in the country is investing into an underlying which is not legal. What I'm trying to say is that everything is either backed by a collateral or it is unsecured. There can be only two things. So I'm buying a bond, it's backed by some strong collateral or a security. Like when you borrow as an investor, when you borrow money from a lender, you have to pledge your house or you have to pledge something, right? So I think that's very simple. Or there's unsecured. So there is nothing illegal happening in the mutual fund industry. See, there are some black sheep. Now, because there is one or two black sheep, the entire herd is absolutely not
so bad. To set the record straight, when we're talking about credit risk funds, first things first, diversification. Typically, a credit risk fund would invest in how many different securities? Like in a portfolio of stocks for a mid-cap fund, I know there are at least 30, 35 stocks
of course,
40 stocks.
Absolutely.
So in a credit risk fund, what is the level of diversification? If you are exposed to one entity or one NBFC or one promoter, is it capped at like maybe 2%, 3%, 4%? What are the usual
parameters? Regulatory cap is at 10%. If you see most of the diversified credit portfolios or corporate bond portfolios, they range in the band of maybe 2 to 3 to 4%. So it's a fairly diversified portfolio of at least 30 to 40 stocks. Okay. So it's not a concentrated strategy. Gilt funds, yes, are concentrated because there are fewer gilts that you can own in terms of liquidity also. But let me tell you that diversified portfolios within the corporate bond space and credit risk is a reality, which, as I said, the investor may or may not be aware. You know, investors tend to be like Dhritarashtra sometimes. So that is where the Sanjay comes into play, and that Sanjay is your advisor.
Okay, so make sure you're listening to the right advisor, the right Sanjay. Speaking of the right advice, let's come to Ashish, who's been hearing all of this very patiently. Your take on credit risk and credit risk funds, Ashish.
I like the Sanjay analogy, first up. I think both of them have summed it up well. I just had a couple of points to add. See, when you look at a credit risk fund, there are three things that you need to keep in mind. One is the granularity of the portfolio. See, direct investing today has become very popular. If you're just going and buying something like a fixed maturity plan where you're matching your time horizon to the underlying portfolio, it's an easy one, right? But the moment you venture into the world of credit funds, I genuinely believe that an advisor can add value. So first up, a credit fund, you should look at the granularity of the portfolio, which means the concentration of the fund in any particular security should not be more than 3 or 4%. Because remember, unlike duration, credit risk can be binary, which means you can lose 100% of your capital. Normally, it does not happen. You normally get 60, 70 cents on the dollar, as we've seen in some of the earlier cases. The second thing you need to be cognizant about is what is the maturity of the portfolio. Is it 2 years, 3 years? So you come into a portfolio which matches your time horizon. And then the last thing that you need to look at is the yield to maturity, right? Which is what is the interest you will make if you stay in the fund for that duration. Now here again, you should be cognizant of the fact that there is a gross yield and there is a net yield.
Okay.
The difference is essentially the expense ratio.
Right.
The charge that the fund is levying to manage the money. Now, what the investor ultimately gets is the net yield to maturity. Now, this is again a concept that is not very well understood. Most people publish gross YTMs and investors think that is the yield they're getting.
Oh, absolutely.
So these are three things that are very, very critical when you choose a credit fund. And thankfully, because of SEBI, today after the classification changes, yes, the funds are named appropriately.
Oh, absolutely. Right? It's finally making sense. You know the duration. If you're in a gilt fund, if you're in a, you know, short duration, long duration, medium duration, all of that has been very clearly spelled out as well.
Correct.
So thank heavens to the regulator for that, actually speaking.
Absolutely.
So as we have established, it's very important, first of all, to realize whether you are in it for the long haul or the short haul, and then decide between duration and accrual. What are the first steps, Ashish? As you're sort of looking at creating a fixed income portfolio, you want to get away from fixed deposits. How do you start?
So the first thing is, in fixed income, I would like to highlight that don't chase performance. Mm. Because in fixed income, the last 1 year performance means nothing. Mm. Just because a fund has done well in the last 1 year doesn't mean that performance is going to continue. Mm. It's far more qualitative an asset class. So first, you got to look at what your time horizon is. Match your time horizon with the appropriate fund. So if your time horizon is, let's say, 4 years, you could buy a fund which has a 3 to 4 year maturity, or you could even go in for a fixed maturity plan if you know that you don't have liquidity requirements before 3 years. And after 3 years, what happens is that you get a much bigger tax advantage.
Sure.
So for an HNI who's paying 30% plus tax on a bank deposit, the moment you come into a fund, the effective tax rate after indexation comes down to 7-8%.
And that's when it starts making sense for a lot of the sort of middle class investors, retail investors as
Absolutely. Well. Absolutely. Okay. And for most investors, if you have a horizon of less than 3 years or less than 1 year or 6 months, you have funds like liquid, short term. Mm-hmm. Match your time horizon with the maturity of the fund.
Right. Okay. So keep that in mind. First of all, figure out how long can you stay invested in, and then start matching those time horizons with the maturity of the particular fund. Vidya, let's come to you. What kind of debt funds are you recommending to clients at the moment?
Right. Once again, over several interest rate cycles, what we have observed is that the ability of investors to stick to duration has been very low, especially retail investors. So coming to your question on what we recommend at this point in time, once again, basics based on their time frame. We ask investors to stick to quality liquid funds and ultra short term funds. We make sure that there is no concentration risk and the credit quality is absolutely high here. There is no place for lower credit when your time frame is short. So funds right now in our list are funds such as Axis Liquid, HDFC Floating Rate, or Aditya Birla Floating Rate, and so on. When it comes to longer term investing, again, medium accrual strategies. Here again, sticking to quality papers is ideal for those who are just making the shift from FDs. A quality fund like HDFC corporate bond, Birla Sun Life corporate bond, these kind of funds help people ensure that they don't have any shocks by way of a paper being downgraded sharply. For those a little more discerning investor who wants an extra bit of yield, slightly higher risk, we in fact don't go to very high credit risk funds. Just to give you an example, a fund like UTI Medium Term, it's actually a medium duration fund under SEBI's category, but it does have some qualities of credit, not as much as credit risk. Now that amount of risk, in our opinion, is sufficient for a retail investor to get that extra bit of returns over his FD. Okay. So these are the kind of accrual strategies we are right now giving.
Okay, fair enough. Ashish, if you could name some funds as well. I mean, you mentioned the broad contours, but the kind of funds you would be recommending.
Anyone who's looking at investing, let's say, money for 3 years plus, we are recommending high quality accrual strategies at this point in time. So you have the Axis Banking PSU fund, you have the IDFC Banking PSU fund. I think even Kotak has a banking and PSU funds. These are essentially funds which are investing in the highest quality papers, and the maturities are between 2 to 4 years. Mm-hmm.
Lakshmi, you get the last word. Let's go back and reconstruct. If I'm hungry and I feel like having a fixed income meal, so let's go back to that example. What is the curd rice? Is a basic accrual fund the curd rice? And what are the add-ons then?
No, so if you want just a liquid fund, no risk at all, you have just steamed rice. And then I won't even then call jasmine rice. And then you want a little bit of additional returns compared to the liquid funds. You have a 3 to 6 month kind of investment horizon. Then you have Jira rice, which is a little bit spiked with Jira. Tastes good. And so they are like 3 to 6 month kind of duration.
Sure.
Then you have a Peace Pulao, which is typically the short duration funds.
So 1 year. That's all 1 year?
Usually, see, anything under 1 year is typically the Jira rice. So, you stick to ultra short-term kind of funds.
Right.
The moment it comes, a little bit of more veggies getting added, then the horizon should be north of 1 year, ideally at least 3 years.
But 1 to 3 years, basically.
That's right. The short-duration funds clearly play that role.
Okay.
And then, of course, if you want to have, you know, the exotics, but before that, the curd rice has to come somewhere in between. But that will be a combination of, say, medium-term funds and corporate bonds funds, public, you know, the PSU bond funds, etc.
Okay.
And then last but not the least, you have the Hyderabadi biryani, which is with a Mirch Ka Salan kind of a thing.
Which is what? The credit risk fund?
Which is a combination of the credit risk and the duration funds. One with the credit risk, and that's where the Mirch Ka Salan comes in. And then one with just the biryani, if you just want to have a palate for the Hyderabadi biryani.
Uh-huh.
That'll be the duration, because it'll come with the exotic veggies as well.
Uh-huh.
But it can give you pains like the ones we saw maybe a couple of months back.
So make sure you have a long time horizon to digest the biryani.
Absolutely, because they're carbs, right?
Brilliant example to end on, and it couldn't get simpler than that, guys. Now, come on. Now you know what is the curd rice, what is the biryani. You can perhaps go and get that perfect lunch going in the world of fixed income. Thank you very much, Ashish and Lakshmi and Vidya, for joining in and trying to demystify these issues for our investors. That's it on this week's podcast. You can catch the show at 6:30 p.m. on Tuesdays with repeats on Saturday and Sunday mornings only on CNBC TV 18. You can also find us on the CNBC TV 18 YouTube channel. Do send your feedback, comments, queries. Catch me on Twitter. My handle is at Surabhi Upadhyay. That's S-U-R-A-B-H-I-U-P-A-D-H-Y-A-Y. Don't forget to add the hashtag money. Catch you next week.